Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Why would you buy somebody from offering prayer? Islamic banking. For God's sake, don't mix up religion and economics.
Are we moving more towards a French style of assimilation?
French liberal assimilation hasn't worked as well as the French expected. Liberal values claim universal validity. But my autonomy consists in not being autonomous in this idiotic way of I decide everything. Let my parents decide certain important things in life.
You have said previously that liberals are rather narcissistic.
First of all, Islam has to be true to itself.
Over the past few years, there has been intense debate about the place of Muslim practice in liberal Western societies. Across the West, partly because of the war on terror, politicians talk of unwelcome shifts in the cultural attitudes and the need to chasten Islam in public life. In many European capitals, there's a fierce debate about whether multiculturalism, a policy coined in the 1960s to integrate migrants, has had its day. Here in Britain, even many on the Labour left today blame the policy for allowing migrants to feel comfortable in their ghettos, whilst the right-wing press talk of no-go areas and isolationist tendencies. This febrile environment has led to leaders like David Cameron to talk of a muscular liberalism, one that demands much more from those that have origins in other countries. My guest today is Lord Bhikkhu Parikh. Lord Bhikkhu is a member of the House of Lords and is a champion of a pluralist society, one where liberal dogma makes way for a genuine multiculturalism, where communities engage in a conversation embracing the possible cultural shifts that may come with that. Bhikkhu is an emeritus professor of philosophy at the University of Westminster and Hull, a distinguished scholar and a prolific writer. Pertinent to today's interview, he wrote a really interesting book, Rethinking Multiculturalism. Lord Bhikkhu Parikh, welcome to the Thinking Muslim podcast. Well,
thank you very much, and thank you for those extremely kind words.
No, it's I probably haven't done your justice to your past works and the amazing writing. I followed your writing for some years, so thank you very much for joining us. It's really a pleasure. So, Bhikkhu, can we start with the current case making its way through the British courts? So a Muslim student at a secondary school denied any room to pray, even disallowed to pray in the school playground during break time. This has led to a spirited public conversation about the position of cultural communities and how much wider society should accommodate these cultures. Before we discuss the theory of multiculturalism, can I have your reflections on this particular case, please?
You see, I haven't followed this case closely.
Yeah.
And I don't know at what stage it is in our legal system. But I should have thought something very, very simple. If there are, in Britain, teaching religion is not banned, as it is in some other countries.
Yeah.
And therefore, if a group of people want to learn about religious studies, they're perfectly welcome to do that. If somebody wants to practice, but if it's an individual demand, I can see the school might find it difficult to accommodate. But the question will be simply one of accommodation, not one of objection on grounds of principle. Why would you bar somebody from offering prayer? I don't see any reason why.
Yeah.
And if the one individual asks for it, others might ask for it as well, then it becomes a matter of school policy, which should be decided partly by the local authorities and partly nationally.
Yeah.
So this case can be resolved in several different ways, depending on the context, depending on the nature of the demand. And that will have to be filled in to make the picture much more clear.
I think the argument of the school is that the school is a secular, neutral space, and religious communities are allowed to practice their religions at home and in their communities, but it would remove the equality that people feel in schools if one group received an advantage or received an accommodation above and beyond other groups.
Yes, but you see, the point is, Britain already makes provision for religious schools.
Yeah.
There are Jewish schools and there are one or two Hindu schools. And therefore, if people want to go to that kind of school,
yeah,
if they want their children to learn about their religion or in other religions, well, there are provisions for this.
Hmm.
Nobody's stopping it.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's not a question of one religion benefiting over another. There is no such thing. I mean, if you are in a religious school, all religions are taught in a program on religious education.
Yeah.
I think the difficulty would arise if in a particular school where there is no provision for religious education.
Yeah.
But there are some pupils who go and say, look, we want to learn Islam or learn about Judaism. Mm. What does the school do? If only half a dozen people were to ask for it, others don't.
Yeah.
Then there might be some difficulties. But I should have thought that completely banning it is only one alternative and not the most sensible one. Mm. Because you then have a discontented community, which is not good for the school or for the family.
Yeah, that's interesting. I want to talk about your idea of multiculturalism in greater depth. But first, it would be interesting to get your view on how you observe the Muslim community as someone who has followed this debate or followed multiculturalism for some time. Because the Muslim community is viewed by wider society with an air of suspicion. Muslims tend to maintain very strong connections with their religion and possibly their culture. And this creates a tension with secularism and secularity. Do you feel that Muslims have not done enough to sufficiently integrate into what is effectively a secular society or a secular process?
I think it's a matter of interpretation.
Yeah.
There are many areas of life where Muslims have gone quite a distance in integrating.
Hmm.
Marriage is not a problem. Education is not a problem, yeah, by and large. Employment is not a problem. Muslims are prepared to work with others. Social interaction is not a problem. Muslims have non-Muslim friends. So I should have thought that they have done a good deal to integrate.
Yeah.
When people, the critics, talk about Muslims holding themselves back, we have to ask ourselves what they have in mind. And I think what they have in mind are two things mainly. Mm. One is bringing religion into all areas of life, whereas other religions don't. But that is not true at all. Mm. And they will say, for example, you know, sitting in a classroom, talking to someone, teaching any area of education, Muslims would say, but you know, Quran doesn't allow this, or Quran allows that. And we should only be guided by the Quran. And other people would say, oh, for God's sake, not Quran again. Hmm. We don't bring in Bible. We don't bring in Bhagavad Gita. Why do you bring in Quran? Now, I can see how this can be understood as a very frustrating experience if people keep pushing a particular text. But I don't think Muslims are doing that. I mean, they value Quran, and rightly so. But Quran can be taught in supplementary classes or in mosque or whatever. You don't need to push it in school, and they are not doing that.
Yeah. You're a thinker of multiculturalism, and in many ways, you differ with, I don't know if we can call it the mainstream strand of multiculturalism, the liberal style of multiculturalism, like Will Kimlicker, particularly found in the United States, Britain, and Canada. And you call for a pluralist form of multiculturalism. Can you expand on what the differences are between your pluralist multiculturalism and liberal multiculturalism?
Well, I mean, multiculturalism in itself is not a complete ideology.
Yeah.
It needs guiding principles, which comes from some other ideology, which could be liberalism. So you have a liberal multiculturalism. Socialism, you could have socialist multiculturalism. Islam, much as people have maligned it, has its own way of coming to terms with multiculturalism.
Yeah.
There are Islamic schools of multiculturalism. So you have different forms of multiculturalism depending on where its fundamental principles come from. Yeah. Now, there I would say the following. Liberals who have been particularly sympathetic to some of the ideals of multiculturalism approach multiculturalism and understand it in a certain way, which is basically that every child should be given education that makes it autonomous, free, thinking, self-critical, all that. Mm. Plus, his social life should be so organized that he's able to relate to others as equals and all that.
Mm.
So individualism is at the center of liberalism.
Yeah.
And from that standpoint, it views multiculturalism. That means that every culture must satisfy certain minimum conditions, one of which is it must have an individualist core. Now, I don't see the point of that. I can see that individualism is to be valued, or rather autonomy is to be valued, but also its value is limited by other factors, concern for community, commitment to one's religion, concern for one's culture. That there are multiple values, and these values have to be balanced against each other. Mm. You can't have just one value generally applicable right across the religious landscape. Mm. So this is my first difficulty with Kimlicker. Mm. Therefore, Kimlicker, multiculturalism is valid only to the extent that it is liberal. Mm. I would reverse the proposition. I would say instead of liberalizing multiculturalism, why not multiculturalize liberalism? That when you talk about liberalism, you start with one particular view of liberalism, individual at the center, autonomy and all that. Why don't you think of different kinds of liberalism? There is a kind of liberalism where the individual is sovereign. There is another kind of liberalism where the individual is understood in a communitarian kind of way, and therefore is much more open to the social pressures and so on. There is a kind of individual liberalism where God is in the center and the individual draws his dignity from God, and God's text becomes very important. So I would therefore say that multiculturalism by definition cannot be captured in terms of one ideology, because then you have lost multi bit of it. You see, multiculturalism would mean very simply that each culture has its own vision of human life, has its own vision of how people should relate to each other. And because different cultures have different visions, none of which can be shown to be the best, they should talk, interact, live together in such a way that they respect each other while sharing certain principles in common. Mm. If this is what multiculturalism is, then obviously no single culture, including liberalism, can be dominant.
Yeah, that's a very interesting. I suppose Kimlicker's argument would be, or at least the liberal multiculturalist would argue, that in order for society to be cohesive, there needs to be a central core ideology for everyone to subscribe to. And your version of pluralism would lead to a less cohesive society, and a society where there would be greater tensions between faith groups and cultural groups. And how would you respond to that?
Well, I would respond to it in the following way. Every society has two problems to face.
Yeah.
Multiculturalism included. First, it must respect the identities of the component communities. Hmm. I mean, in any multicultural society, you have different groups, different communities, different religions, different ethnicities.
Yeah.
And they have certain rights. They make certain demands. And out of respect for them, as well as earning their permanent gratitude, we should recognize those demands and give them those rights. So in that sense, multiculturalism is going to mean different systems of rights for different communities. Mm. But at the same time, they have to live together. And therefore, and society, as you said, should be cohesive. Mm. Therefore, there must be a unifying framework. Mm. So the problem for any multicultural society is how to respect diversity within unity. Right. So how do you create diversity? You give certain rights and opportunities to encourage different communities to contribute their best to the common culture.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you also insist on certain common principles. Otherwise, the society falls apart, or Yugoslavia or Soviet Union, where these groups are at each other's throat. And that's where the question, that the other reverse of what we have been discussing, what are the common principles
Yes.
that people share or should share in a multicultural society? And I would say three or four things.
Yeah.
First of all, ideally, there should be a common language. I mean, it's not absolutely vital that if 10%, 20% of the people don't speak English. But nevertheless, it is important that the bulk of people in every community should be able to speak a common language so they can understand each other. But more importantly, there must be a body of certain constitutional principles upon which they should agree. Mm-hmm. Who has the authority? To do what? In what areas? How does the policeman acquire his authority? What is parliament? I mean, there are certain constitutional principles. And what are the basic values that guide your community? Mm-hmm. Liberty, equality, justice. These are abstractions. We have to deconstruct them. What kind of liberty are we interested in? To make property? To pursue religion? Similarly, equality of what? Of rights, opportunities, circumstances, what? Mm. So what we have to do is to, so second important thing for any commonality is common principles, broadly shared values, not all values, but broadly shared values which influence what we do. The third thing which is very important, it can't be prescribed in a book, is common history. We have lived together, we have struggled together, we have fought wars together. Now, naturally, you and I haven't fought the wars. Mm-hmm. You were not here, nor was I.
Yes.
But what we mean is that we have memories of that. And our fathers did. They passed on some understanding of that.
Yeah.
That the suffering that the war produced, we can recall it. I can say to somebody, look, you know, I used to have an uncle who died in the war. That is what we mean by shared history, shared common experiences and a shared past. Mm-hmm. And finally, a certain common future which we want to build. What kind of future do we want to live in? What kind of society do we want to create? Mm-hmm. So I would say that these four things, plus some others, create a kind of general view that can become the basis of unity in a society.
This sounds like a very thin way of creating cohesive societies. I came across an article written by someone who's very antagonistic towards Islam, Douglas Murray, and he spoke of asserting a thick liberalism in order to counter some of the religious tendencies of Muslims, and he was specifically talking about Muslims there. You would reject the idea of asserting liberalism as a way of building cohesion in say, British society.
You two do it too. This is David Cameron's muscular liberalism.
Yes.
And what you are doing is to itemize the muscles, you know, muscular this, muscular that.
Yeah.
Now, why the question for me is, why do you think that this kind of muscular liberalism is critically important to hold a society together?
Yeah.
Secondly, in fact, it might do the opposite. That if some of these principles are not acceptable to people or go against their deeply held beliefs, then to force them, when they've got to accept, you're forcing them. If not forcing them, you're at least making sure as schoolboys that these things are planted in them and create conflicts within their families, between them and their parents, then if you are doing all this, you are provoking a reaction, almost a rebellion. How can that be a source of unity? So what Kimlicka and others are saying, I accept bits of it, which is when Kimlicka says, for example, that there are certain fundamental liberal values which no one can or should totally ignore, that in human life has dignity, that the human beings demand respect, that they should relate to each other in terms of equality and justice. Discrimination of any form is out. That these are the fundamental values in any society, which can be defended to the satisfaction of their critics. And they, once they are established in society, become the basis. So then I could look at my society and say, you know, I'm not a subject of discrimination. I enjoy freedoms. I enjoy the same thing that others do. We are the same. Which is where an interesting question comes up, which is, if I didn't get the rights that you have, I might say I was being treated as a second-class citizen. Now, this idea of a second-class citizen worries me. It seems to imply that I must have exactly the same thing as you, otherwise I'm second-class and you're first-class. Now, that needn't be so. For example, in a Muslim might be treated in a certain way. He might enjoy certain privileges. He might be able to go, his Muslim parents might be able to take their children to Hajj, which Christians might not because it's not a practice for them. Now, it would be wrong to say that the Christians feel discriminated against, because your religion has one set of requirements, another religion has another. So I would simply say that being a second-class citizen is an important concept, but simply to deny the same rights as others do doesn't amount to second-class citizen.
That's really interesting. So your form of pluralism, which you call for, would allow for communities to remain as they were, to not be challenged, to not feel uneasy about their religious and cultural practice. How far are you willing to go then to tolerate those communities? For example, if a Muslim family said, we want enshrined within the law polygamous marriages, as an example, should Western society accommodate these people based on their religious preferences?
Well, when you say accommodate, it has accommodated in some cases, where an immigrant coming, and he comes with his wife, and he says, but I also have a second wife, may I bring her? And in some cases, the law has not only allowed, but even insisted that the family unity requires that you bring your entire family, not just one part of it. But I would say that there is no reason why the host society, if that's what we want to call it, should be expected to change its values to accommodate foreigners, immigrants. That would be totally wrong. It has its own values. It's committed to those values. It just doesn't formally adhere to them or sincerely practices them. They are part of its identity. So majority community, or the existing, not just the majority, the existing community, as a result of its history, past experiences, has acquired certain values, certain identity. Should it give up or should it compromise with them? And the answer is, in some cases it may have to, or it should. Not have to, but should. In other cases, it need not. And again, the examples are there in the courts of law, various cases have come up. A Muslim, for example, and we don't just think of Muslims, which again is in a very invidious kind of way, very discriminatory, very patronizing, as a Muslim is the only source of differences. Hindus make similar demands, and so do Sikhs. But let me stick to this Muslim for the time being. That he comes and says, for example, that he wants to go to a bank where no interest is paid. Interest-free. Instead of interest, you can give the same amount of money as a share in the profit. that the bank has made, or the bank has loaned to an industry, the profit the industry has made, that profit is shared. That sharing is religiously and morally allowed, but not interest. This society was puzzled when they made the demand. You know what you're talking about? Islamic banking. For God's sake, don't mix up religion and economics.
Yes.
What do you mean, don't mix up? They are inseparable. Economics devoid of religion is disastrous. So you have two different views of the relation between religion and economics. Secularism is not the answer. So what do you do? Increasingly, this society accepted that value, and Islamic banks now flourish like anything. Not only that, but started in this society, and this society capitalizes on that, makes money on that. Now, has it compromised this value, or has it not? It has, to some extent, but not to other extent. To what extent has it accepted it? Because it has allowed these banks to not only tolerate them, but even give them tax exemption. Okay, but not accepted fully, because it is not itself going to practice them. Allowing other people to practice, but not practice itself, which means partial acceptance of a value, because they respect you, and therefore you respect Islamic bank. So you are allowed to practice that value. They don't. So this happens all the time, that in some areas you compromise, in other areas you don't. I mean, again, the Hindus, for example, would say, look, we want to cremate our body,
yes,
rather than bury them. Now, after some struggle, they were allowed to cremate the body, and the ashes are then thrown into the water.
To what degree?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Do you believe this type of society that you're painting a picture of, a pluralistic society that we may have witnessed in the 1970s and 80s, and even the 90s, to what degree do you feel that society is gone? You talked about Cameron's muscular multiculturalism. Are we moving more towards a French style of assimilation, of liberal assimilation, rather than the pluralism that you talk of?
Well, French liberal assimilation hasn't worked as well as the French expected. Mm-hmm. The girl's scarf became a big controversy there.
Yeah.
Whereas happily it didn't come up here, and we resolved it very peacefully.
Yeah.
In France, in fact, citizenship also depends on how good your French is. And the way the interviews take place about granting citizenship, they can sometimes sound very oppressive to the British ears. So I don't think the French assimilationism is A, working, but B, more importantly, is morally acceptable.
Yeah.
Because what you are doing is to force people to behave in a certain way, and that's not the way to treat your citizens. That's where you might treat them as second-class citizens. First-class citizens don't have to do that kind of thing. So I would say that the French system, in this particular area, giving citizenship, the French system has not worked. In other cases, it has worked slightly better than our system. For example, when children started going to school and they were not allowed to wear hijab, initially there was resistance, standoff, and so on. Eventually, I think both sides began to realize that things have got out of control and through discussion. And what the French have done is to have this religious advisory committee. So the state joins the religious advisory committee and resolves the issue in collaboration with them.
When we discuss multiculturalism, there is often the debate, the counter that liberalism is a universal idea. It should be treated as universalism. And so cultures that arrive in the UK or Canada and the United States, they inevitably need to embrace this universalism because it's a truth. It's a truth claim that cultural communities are going to have to negotiate with. How do you respond to the idea of liberal universalism?
I respond to liberalism?
Yeah, liberal universalism.
Yes, now this universalism can mean one of two things. Liberal values claim universal validity. Wherever we go, individual has to be the basic unit of moral life.
Yeah.
Now, I would say that liberalism is wrong to make that kind of claim. That liberalism claims to be universal, that all human beings have certain rights, that bit I accept.
Yeah.
But when liberalism says that individual is the ultimate unit of moral life, that individual should not do anything unless he has critically thought it through, that these are the ways in which human beings should be shaped, then I don't think its values are universally valid. Then liberalism is valuable. It makes claims to universal validity, but these claims are not justified. So that if you went to India, for example, or Pakistan, and met people who said, well, look, you know, I don't believe in individual making his own choices. You met a girl and the girl says, you know, I want to get married, but I have allowed my father to make the decision for myself. I'm too young, too immature. I haven't seen much of the matrimonial market. How can I decide? How can I say this boy is going to be my lifelong partner? No, my parents love me. They have good judgment. I've trusted them. Now, very different view of the individual.
Yeah.
But if this is the view she holds and wants to hold on to, who are we to say, look, these are completely muddled? If a liberal then goes and says, no, you're a fool, you're a slave, you're not sufficiently autonomous.
Yeah.
She will say, I don't know what you're talking about. My autonomy consists in not being autonomous in this idiotic way of I decide everything. Let my parents decide certain important things in life.
That's interesting. You have said previously that liberals are rather narcissistic in their mindset. Can you expand and explain that? Why did you ascribe narcissism to...
Well, I don't know if I use the word narcissism, but if I did, I'm prepared to stand by it. In the sense that the liberals seem to think that they represent the end point of history, that history began with men being a member of a particular tribe, particular religion, particular ethnic group, and so on. Now, at last, he has been liberated from all this. An individual in his glory or her glory has emerged.
Yeah.
So in that sense, liberalism claims to have discovered the meaning of history. The meaning of history, the telos of history, is to create a free-thinking individual. That is the end of history. Fukuyama.
Yes.
And how did that end come about? We liberals fought for it. It's in our society that that end is realized. Other societies are struggling, communist, Muslim, Islamic, Hindu, all these bogus societies. Our society, the one where individual is free, there is free press flourishing, all that. Now, they don't realize that the price for this is your prisons are never empty, your bars are full of drunkards and all that, where your women are not particularly careful about their fidelity. With all that happening, you don't see the darker side of modernity. You only see the positive side of modernity. Mm. So I say to the liberals, well, you have certain achievements. You are right to be proud of it. You have fought against traditionalism. You have fought against customary beliefs. You have fought against also religion dominating life and say this is wrong. I'm glad you did that. You have cleared up some rubbish. But in the process, you have also accumulated other rubbish, which is part of your identity, and that should be fought. So why don't you look inwards just a little? So while rejecting things outside, you might also find that there are bits in you that you need to reject.
So are you suggesting that religious and cultural communities could teach
liberals?
Liberals.
Of course they can. Really? Of course, which is why I keep saying that the liberals must, if this is the case, as I have argued, that liberals have their limitations, their inadequacies. How can they overcome those limitations? By talking dialogue systematically with other ideologies. So they can, how liberalism of the 19th century, red in tooth and claw, capitalist, came socialism, and liberalism entered into a dialogue with socialism, and you have liberal or social democracy, which is what welfare state is about. So liberalism has been open. That is its salvation, that it has the capacity to open up itself to other ideologies and learn something. And that is what liberalism has done. And it is only by learning from other ideologies that liberalism corrects itself. It has a self-correcting mechanism which other ideologies do not have. They can also conduct a dialogue, but it doesn't spring from within. For liberal, it is a part of its identity to keep talking, to keep opening up yourself. To have an open mind is not just a habit. It is inherent in your nature for a liberal. So I would say, therefore, that liberalism can grow, develop new insights, and that's what you find in the early years of the 20th century, when the idea of welfare state came, when the idea of helping the poor came, sharing came, distribution. These were the ideas which liberals developed in the course of learning from, arguing with socialist and other left-wing ideologies. Likewise, it has to argue with the religious ideologies and develop an equally interesting religious way of looking at life.
Yeah.
You see, it has tended to dismiss religion, by and large, saying it's all bogus, fundamentalist and all that. Mistake. It should enter into a dialogue with them and see what is there in religion which motivates religious people. Yeah. And once it does that, then it begins to learn certain insights from religion and becomes religiously sensitive. So just as it has become economically sensitive through dialogue with socialism, I would like it to become spiritually sensitive through dialogue with religion.
Fantastic. When we talk about multiculturalism, it's always set within the modern state, the liberal state, and the successes of multiculturalism since the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Do we have models of multiculturalism in history pre the modern state?
Yes, we have. Of course, we have quite a few. Whether we will call them multicultural in our sense is a different matter. But if you take a traditional Muslim society, where Jews and Christians and others were allowed to practice their customs and lead their own lives. Of course, they were not that kind to Hindus, who were dismissed as idol worshippers. Mm-hmm. And idol worship is condemned in Quran. Well, that means sharing Allah's sovereignty with somebody else. But by and large, with other religions, especially religions of the book, Islam has a good record of establishing a multicultural society. Likewise, if you look at the Middle Ages, Christianity, although it was horrible to Jews, nevertheless, it was tolerant. Likewise, in Spain, Muslims were in charge, and they tolerated. In fact, Muslim record of tolerance was great.
Yeah.
Tolerance of Christians and Jews and others. Similarly, if you turn east and look at India, India has a record of having various communities practicing their own ways of life, a state concerned with, you know, I won't use the word state in India, but just for argument, a state providing a framework of unity within which diversity can flourish. So I think there have been multicultural societies, with the proviso that we might not call them multicultural because of a certain peculiar character that they have, which we can go into if you want. But basically, having several cultural communities within a single territory, if that's what multiculturalism means, then history is full of them. It couldn't be otherwise. I would say these are the most natural ways in which people come together.
Yeah, that's a really perceptive point. Let's talk about Muslims and Islam in the current context. You talk about a community of communities, a conversation between communities. As someone who's outside of the faith, how do you believe or that Islam or Muslims can contribute to modern British society?
How can Islam contribute to Muslims? It can contribute in many different ways. I mean, first of all, Islam has to be true to itself.
Right.
Rather than be taken over by the likes of bin Laden and others who will say Islam is the last word and we must impose it, mankind would be a better place if everybody became a Muslim. Now, that is not Islam. Islam must therefore, what it do is to say, look, we recognize other faiths. We recognize that each has something to contribute. We believe, although Islam believes it's the last word, but Islam repeatedly says, every man his own faith, every man his own prophet. If Allah wanted everyone to be one, why would he have created different religions? So Islam has a space for diversity. It must exploit that space. There is a big responsibility on Christian, on Islamic theologians. I want Islamic theologians not to be simply responding to Christian theologians' questions and answers, but to say actively say, look, here is a society, here is diverse, there are people, there are individuals, all these things. What is there within Islam's history which can provide answers to these questions? First question, individual. Is individual sacred? Yes, Islam says it's sacred. Why? Islam's own ground. God created, and you know the whole story of Islam's. Similarly, equal. Well, Islam has no awareness of color. One of the only religions to recognize people as equal. Gendered, yes. But there again, I think things are changing. So what Islam can do is to bring its own distinct voice to this conversation. Hindus can bring their own. And we can have these multiple religions competing in their own way, not for converts, but competing for ideological clarification in their own way, but nevertheless recognizing also that each has something to contribute.
There is a, when we talk about earlier models of multiculturalism, the Islamic model, especially the Ottoman model, the millet system, it permitted religious groups to live territorially, almost semi-independent from the central government. They had their own courts, they had their own laws, they had their own customs, and the central government was not allowed to interfere in those practices. Could you imagine such a level of deep pluralism existing in modern liberal societies?
Yes, it can. Well, can you think of a time when gay marriage was accepted?
Yeah.
Or lots of things that these were... I am really stunned at the way in which we create in practice plural ways of living, while in theory denying them.
Yes.
Now, if you have to ask an old generation, gentleman, saying, look, you know, they are married, but the husband is a man and the wife is also a man, he would have said, unthinkable. Plato, Aristotle, Hobbes, Locke, all these guys could never dream of it. And yet it's happening. Others are being forced to accept it or persuaded to accept it. So we have one of the deepest differences. Likewise, an atheist. Somebody has built his whole life around belief in God. Another rejecting God. So you have deep, profoundly deep moral differences. And yet, A, we are able to live together. And B, that we respect each other. So I should have thought that we are in fact increasingly moving in the direction of deeper moral differences and learning from it. I mean, for example, if one were to say in marriage, tomorrow you might have a woman having many husbands. Just as you have polygamy, you can have polyandrous. Now, reverse of Islam. Now, if that were to happen, people would have to accept it. So you have the extraordinary situation of a new way of life growing up.
One final question for you, Lord Bhikkhu Parikh. We are today, there is a debate in Parliament about Gaza. And as you know, Gaza has been a lightning rod, a real bone of contention within the Muslim community. You're a Labour peer, and many Muslims feel betrayed by the Labour Party, or at least by the words and the actions of some of the Labour leadership. And there is a movement now, an organised movement, away from electorally supporting the Labour Party. I mean, how do you reflect on what we have seen over the last 4 months of Gaza, and maybe, you know, if it's, I think it's fair to say, an inability of Labour to find an adequate voice to articulate what's going on in Gaza?
Well, this issue is very complex at one level, yeah. Very simple at another. It's very complex because for the last 75 years, that has been the trouble spot. Israel, Palestinians, not Gaza in particular, because Gaza didn't exist in that sense. What is happening now, I think I deeply, deeply deplore and to some extent condemn that for 1,200 people to be killed in the first round, the Jews, and then 30,000 to be killed in revenge, and many of them children and women, and not being able to, Israel not willing to listen to other countries and cut down on its expansionist aggressive attitude, I find most unacceptable. Not only Israel's fault, but even the Americans, I would have expected them to tell Israelis firmly, not just making noises which are insincere because they are not followed up with action. So I feel very concerned that several powers have seemed to have treated Israel as a kind of specially privileged state which can do anything it likes, can get away with anything it likes.
Yes.
That is a dangerous thing for any state to feel, that it is special. The world will stand by it. Well, the world might up to a point, but the time will come when it will not, and that state will then regret it. As for the Labour Party, I think it has to negotiate two complicated areas. One is between Israel and Palestinians. How do you resolve the two-state question and all that? And secondly, how do you reconcile the Jewish pressure versus Muslim pressure in Britain? So one is a problem relating to Israel and Middle East, the other is a problem relating here. And on both these, especially the second, I think the Labour Party has not been able to take a clear-cut position. Not because it is confused, but because its sympathies are divided, that it feels strongly for Muslims, but also at the same time recognizes that the Jews have a case, rightly so. So what do you do? Where do you stand? So one day you say something about Muslims and they will like. Another day you say something which the Jews would like. And even to think of the whole issue in terms of Jews versus Muslims, I find deeply unacceptable, offensive. I mean, after all, we are talking about British citizens, Jews or Muslims, who have their own concerns, their own views, their own demands. And any citizen is prepared, is able to ask a political party to which he belongs to change his course if he thinks it's wrong. So I don't blame either of them, but I do feel that Labour in particular should have been far more clear-cut on where it stands. When issues were clear-cut, like unacceptable amount of violence by Israel, so that even the king's son is compelled to speak up. There is hardly anyone in Britain who doesn't feel grieved that Israel, a civilized country, should feel that it is given a completely free hand to do what it likes, which is not the case. When, after 7th October, people recognize its right to defend itself, but no one says that it can do what it likes. So that to kill 30,000 people is an answer to 1,200 or fewer people killed. I mean, that's not only disproportionate, but it's butchery. So at some point, I would have liked Israel, and I like the country in many ways, I would have liked Israel to say after 7th October, look, you have killed our people. We have a right to defend ourselves. We could do the same to you. But we will not. But if you do the following, you come and talk to us. Let's resolve the problem. And secondly, you promise that this will not happen again. If you can guarantee us that this will happen, we do not retaliate. And the retaliation now is left to the rest of the world. You see, like the 9/11 in America. Instead of America attacking Iraq, America should have said, well, look, you guys have come and attacked us. It's the world's responsibility to strike back, not us. So I would have liked Israel to be a little more moderate, a little more mature in its attitude. This gung-ho kind of approach, where you go and kill anybody who comes in the way, is not really worthy of a civilized country.
Bhikkhu Parikh, thank you very much for your time today and for sharing your wisdom with us.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope I haven't said anything that will get me into trouble.
I don't. I think the party whips will not be knocking on your door after today. Thank you. Thank you very much.
No, Labour Party is a broad church, if that's right, if the right word, multicultural. And people are sympathetic to what I'm saying. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please remember to subscribe to our social media and YouTube channels and head over to our website, thinkingmuslim.com, to sign up to my weekly newsletter. Jazakallah khair.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.